Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elijah Campbell manning things at our Hillside Medical Games studios for the next 4 hours. We've got a lot of things to get into in what looks like a return to action for the Predators. Tonight they will be at Capital One Arena, appropriate name, the home of the Washington Capitals. 6 o'clock puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you starting at 5 as the league gets cranked back up again. They did have games last night. They did have one postponement. But other than that, they did resume hockey. It's been a while. It'll be 12 days for the Predators since the last time they played in Chicago when they beat the Blackhawks in overtime 3-2. That was on Friday night, December 17th. So it's been a while. The Red Wings and the Islanders were postponed, but there were some games last night, so the league has cranked back up, including the Lightning getting a win at home, L.A. falling at home to Vegas. Sharks, by the way, a lot of goals last night. Sharks beating the Coyotes 8-7 in a shootout. And the Blue Jackets and Blackhawks.
So you're saying a lot of overs hit?
A lot of overs hit. 6-3, 8-7, and 5-4 were the three finals last night.
Yep, that's quite a bit of scoring. You can tell that these guys have been bored and sitting around and wanted to go play some hockey.
Well, I bring that up because I do wonder if that is maybe a prelude of things to come. I know that's not typically the Predators' style. Their games are much more low-scoring. They play a physical brand of hockey. But last night, it was a little alarming. I'm sitting there going, wow. I mean, you know, the Lightning scoring a lot of goals, okay, no big deal. Vegas scoring a lot of goals, oh, okay, not that big of a deal. But Sharks, 8-7 over the Coyotes, you know, 15 goals, 9 goals, and 9 goals in the three games. You do wonder if there's something to that of the long layoff, if maybe they were a little bit rusty coming out of the gates, or at least the defense was a little bit rusty coming out of the gates, or the goaltending play was a little bit rusty coming out of the gates. Vasilevsky wasn't in between the pipes for Tampa Bay, so that maybe that did play a factor in it. But I don't know. We're about to find out tonight, starting at 6 o'clock as the Predators try to resume their season tonight against the Capitals.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Can they keep this 7-game winning streak going?
I mean, it's hard to, like, it's hard to say, because I would say momentum has stopped because of the break, but you can also say that about everybody else. Washington's a good team, though. But I think there's extra juice. You know, I heard the morning show batting this about of, you know, like for Tannehill going up against the Dolphins, like, you know, the extra motivation that's, you know, that's not a thing. It's a thing. And there's extra juice tonight. You know, for guys like Philip Forsberg that, you know, there's obviously there, I don't think there's any ill will between them and Peter Laviolette, but it's like, hey, that's the former coach. Like, yeah, we want to beat him. And it's like David Poile brought up yesterday. Like, yeah, you know, like there's a lot of respect, a lot of good things happen, but we want to beat him. And I think the same goes for him. I mean, there's for him and Kevin McCarthy, you know, they're like, yeah, I want to beat those guys. Like, so I mean, that thing that exists. There's a little extra oomph for this game tonight. I did ask Shea Weber that the first time Barry Trotz came back, and he gave me a very Shea Weber like answer and look of like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you jerk, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And he laughed afterwards. But there's extra juice, whether they want to talk about it or not. So I think this will be fun for sure.
Honestly, if Ryan Tannehill doesn't have any extra emotions for this game, a team that threw him away, they threw him away like our Tuesday trash here in Smyrna, that they threw him away. They basically told they paid the Titans for him to go away. If there is no extra juice for him, then that's not the guy I want as my quarterback, because that means he doesn't have the proper fire in his belly. That's not the competitor that I want. I don't believe that for a minute. I believe he is a fiery competitor. I believe he absolutely will have extra juice in this game. And to suggest that he won't suggests to me that the guy's just flatline. It's robotic. I don't want that guy as my quarterback. You're telling me he doesn't remember the team that paid another team for you to go away? They gave up nothing. Titans gave up nothing. It was a steal of a trade. Yeah, I know. He hasn't had the greatest of season. But when you look at the overall body of work since he's been here and what they gave up and what they had to pay the first year, I mean, should have been brought up on charges, John Robinson. Dolphins, bad organization. A horrible, horrible trade. And for a guy like Tannehill, a competitor, you're telling me he doesn't remember the team that spent a first-round pick on him and drafted him and tried to develop him? Just they paid someone for him to go away? But he doesn't have extra feelings on beating that team? If the answer is no, he doesn't, then that's not the guy I want under center for me.
Do you remember about, I guess it's been 6 or 7 years ago, when I started doing interviews for the radio network, I interviewed Ryan Suter. And it was the first year that he was with Minnesota and coming back here. The boos were starting and all of that. And I asked him, you know, you know about energy in this building, but you get a different kind of energy when you come here, which was basically a nice way of saying you get booed out of the building every time you come here now. Does you feed off of that? And his answer to me was, it's not so much me necessarily, but it's my teammates, that they hear it. And so they feed off of it and get a little extra juice for me. That's what I think you're going to see Sunday with Ryan Tannehill. That he's not – he's going to use it as extra motivation, no doubt. But he's not going to be the vocal guy of like, hey, I want to kick their ass. They cut me or they traded me for nothing. Like, but it's the guys around him that are going to go, hey, we're going to win this for Ryan. Like, they threw him out with the trash, like you were saying. I think that's where some of the extra motivation comes in. It's the guys around him.
I remember the interview well. I don't compare the two. I don't think they're apple-to-apple comparisons. I remember the interview well with Ryan Suter. This is not about why would his team have – to me, I mean, Ryan, remember, he chose to be with them. Ryan Suter, he chose them over the Predators. So it's different. Ryan Tannehill didn't choose the Titans over the Dolphins. The Dolphins put him out with the trash. That there's a difference. Like, the fire has to come within him. I don't know how much fire. To me, his teammates, how can they be mad at the Dolphins? Their stupidity is their reward. I mean, what anger would his players that weren't in that situation, didn't have anything to do with that organization, why would they be fired up for that? It's their loss, and it's their reward. I mean, to me, it's got to come from Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Suter, what he was saying is basically, I chose Minnesota over Nashville. My teammates recognize that I chose them over the Predators, and when I go into that building and I get creamed by the fans, they're coming to my defense like, that's our guy. He chose us over you. Deal with it. Ryan Tannehill is not the same situation. I don't view it as an apples-to-apples comparison. I don't know why Taylor Lewan would be fired up to beat the Dolphins because they threw Ryan Tannehill out on the curb with Tuesday's trash. I mean, I don't know why he would have.
I think he's a good teammate. I mean, I think that's his guy. Like, that's his quarterback. I definitely think somebody like Taylor Lewan would feed off of that.
Okay. I mean, and maybe so. I just don't – I don't see the two comparisons. The Ryan Suter one makes sense. I get it, because his team is rallying, saying, that's my guy. That's our guy. He chose us over you.
Right.
And you're not going to boo him. And you're going to boo him, then we're going to try to beat you. And they had success. If you remember, they used it as motivation. Yeah,
they did. The bottom line, though, is you have a chance to win the division, so you need to be fired up anyway. It doesn't matter who you play. You need to go win the game and win the division. Because
I don't think Ben Jones needs the story of Ryan Tannehill to get up. There's a lot at stake for this game.
Sure.
To me, it's all about Ryan Tannehill. Like, Ryan Tannehill should have extra oomph in him to absolutely stick it to the Dolphins. And like I said before, if he doesn't, then is he spoken yet? Does he speak today?
I think it's today, yeah. He is not.
And I know he never says anything, but he's going to get asked about it. But if he just throws it off like, yeah, I don't even, like, Miami's in the far distance. Like, I don't even think about them. Like, maybe he's just saying that publicly because he never says anything. But that's not the answer I want behind closed doors. Behind closed doors, I want a guy who's going to be, he's going to absolutely try to stick it to him and say, right. Oh, really? You paid for me to go away? You gave me up for nothing? And, oh, by the way, you paid my salary, most of my salary the first year, for me to go away? Okay. How have you done since I've been gone? How do you like this? That's what I want to see. I want it to be absolutely about Ryan Tannehill. The Ryan Suter thing, he chose them. It's unfortunate. I hate it. But he chose them. That's why they rallied for him. Ryan Tannehill didn't choose anything. He got put out with yesterday's trash. And I hope he remembers that. And I hope he uses that as motivation against your Dolphins. I really do.
Robbie Stanley has weighed in on our conversation on Twitter. Nobody ever said he wouldn't have extra motivation. We're saying at that position, it doesn't matter as much as others. Your job is to make the right throws and decisions regardless of the team you're against. It's not like a linebacker hitting people.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't hear the conversation. I'm going off what you said.
Yeah, and I get that part, but I still think there's extra motivation because there's a human element of you got fired. You got fired by that team. If you want to put it in normal layman terms, you got fired. You got traded away for nothing. And so, yeah, you should be pissed off. And I know he's the quarterback, and he's got to do all those things that Robbie's saying. I agree with that. But I also think he's going to internally have that extra, like, yeah, I want to beat them, not only so we win the division, but because you fired me. And I want to show you that that was the wrong move.
We'll come back. Paul Feinbaum. Hey, Paul. We'll talk to him next here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You realize you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day? Yeah, you can. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. You know, when you hear that, what that means. It's time for Paul Feinbaum to kick off his show or another hour every day from 2 to 6, and you can hear it on 94.9 here on our sister station. And every week when he joins us, he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, hope you had a good Christmas, and you're ready for a happy new year. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you, guys. I hope you did, too.
This bowl season so far, to me, has been a little bit of an unmitigated disaster. You can't determine. You got teams switching bowls and bowls getting canceled at the last minute. I mean, hell, I didn't even know. I went to go look for the NC State-UCLA score and didn't even realize it had been canceled. What do you make overall as we sit here on, what is today, December 29th, as we sit here on December 29th of bowl season to this point?
I think in some ways we're getting what we deserve because we should have an expanded playoff or at least one in the working. And the bowl system is outdated. It's antiquated. And you know, I think they even added an additional game this year just to satisfy all the 500 teams. And not to sound like the grumpy old guy in the back, but 500 teams really have no business going to games. And just in the SEC already, we've seen Florida lose to go to 6-7. We saw Auburn do the same thing, as well as, I think, Missouri. So, yeah, the motivation isn't there. The transfer portal has added to the chaos. Coaching changes have added. And then you have Texas A&M, which I know we alluded to, I think, a week ago, without a quarterback, without several coaches, and suddenly they have COVID problems. So if you take COVID out of the equation, it's still a mess. When you add COVID, it's an unmitigated disaster, as you said. And I asked an official today, I said, what's the protocol? And I think I can explain it. If you have unvaccinated players who are showing symptoms, then you test them. But other than that, it's don't ask, don't tell.
You look, you're not a grumpy old man because we all deserve to be grumpy because we've watched this play out for years and years and years, for a long time. And I just don't understand. It's kind of like, you know, everybody's got that relative or friend that it's extremely frustrating, right? Like, they make the same mistakes over and over and over again. You say out loud, privately, why don't they get it? Why can't they ever figure things out? Like, everybody knows that person. That person is the NCAA. Like, why can't they ever get anything right? So we all deserve to be grumpy because it seems like for whatever reason, they've been searching for common sense, and they still haven't found it, and we're going into 2022.
Well, and they're not going to, because they really don't do much anymore other than collect big paychecks. The commissioners run college football, and they all had their vested interest in the bowl games. The SEC has ties across the country. And you know, they determine really who goes where, and you get some good matchups from like tomorrow in Charlotte. You can laugh if you're sitting in Nashville, but South Carolina, North Carolina, it's a drive-to game. The weather's going to be pretty decent, so they'll have a big crowd. Now, if you're in Montana, you probably don't care. But what I find sad, now I will sound old school here, is that these games really did used to matter. I remember I covered the very first Music City Bowl. It was one of the worst nights of my life.
Yes, it was.
lovely Vanderbilt Stadium.
Alabama and Virginia Tech, and it was an absolute crappy day.
It was, but there was until the day before the game, I think, when it was snowing or sleeting. I mean, there was excitement in town. I remember as a kid, I'm not trying to go Abe Lincoln log cabin here, but we didn't have that much, and we would have friends who would offer us tickets to the Liberty Bowl every year, and that was I can still tell you every single Liberty Bowl I went to, who played. Now, I watched the Liberty Bowl last night, and I don't ever want to think about that evening again. So it's a different world because there were a handful of games, and if your town was lucky enough to have one, it was really a big deal. Now, I think I changed my mind on that late December night, and I think it was 1998, covering Virginia Tech and Alabama, because I remember standing on the field at the end of the game, and it was like 38-6, and it was 25 or 30 degrees, and I've never felt worse. And the wind was howling, and I decided maybe there are too many bowl games, but I was a little ahead of myself there.
Well, Mike Leach would like to forget the Liberty Bowl. There's no doubt about that. And by the way, that first ever Music City Bowl at Vanderbilt Stadium was sold out. I mean, I get it. It was Alabama, Virginia Tech, but just a point of reference to your point, it was a big deal, and it was a crappy, crappy cold day, and it was sold out. I had to basically apologize to our listeners. Like, I kept giving commentary on Houston Auburn yesterday during our show, and I just appreciate people sticking with us, because it was a brutal game to watch. It was like neither team, and that is the other element to this that makes it. I used to, just kind of, once again, let's show our age, Paul. I mean, you talking about something just like the NCAA tournament in men's basketball? Everybody plays the office pool. Man, there was nobody that got more geeked up and ready to go than to be in a bowl pool. Like, I loved being a bowl. I haven't done bowl pool in years because where we are today, the transfer portal, you've got kids opting out because they're going to – and that's fine. But I'm saying you can't keep up with it. And COVID, I mean, forget. Let's just leave COVID out of it. It was already messy with all the kids, the Christian McCaffrey, and that was kind of like the first huge wave – of all the good players are opting out. They're not even playing in the game. So I stopped doing it.
No, you're right. And again, I'll stop the old school conversation, but there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that bowl games were memories. The community was really excited. There was, if you were a small business owner in Nashville, you wanted to contribute. You wanted to go to the luncheon. You wanted to entertain. I'm a couple hours away from flying out to the Cotton Bowl, and I don't even know anyone excited about those games. And I know there, if you turn on ESPN, you have your standard interviews, and I was on one this morning. But that's the problem with the entire college football ecosystem right now, that there's such a long time between the last meaningful game we had, which was the SEC championship game, and now that the public has tuned out. This is a tough week. If you're working this week, you got the short end of the stick, because most people I know are off. They'll flip the game on if they're home, but more than likely they're out doing something else, and it affects the semifinals. And I would somebody please explain to me why we have a Saturday lineup of college football, and I know the answer, by the way. It's the 4 o'clock start of the Rose Bowl, and I've got to go to Dallas to cover a game at 2:30 Nashville time on Friday afternoon, New Year's Eve. And I promise you, people in the audience are going, "Oh, that game's on 2:30. I didn't realize that. I was out, you know, picking up some knickknacks for my New Year's Eve party."
Sad but true. Yes, that's very sad. I do wonder. I mean, if people are listening to our shows, right, you would expect them to be pretty tuned into the sports scene. And I do wonder, sitting here today on this Wednesday, a couple days out from the playoffs beginning, how many people know that the first game is a 2:30 kickoff?
No,
that don't know.
I'll never forget the first time I covered one of these New Year's Eve games. It was the exact same place in Arlington, at Jerry's World. And I was out. I went out and, you know, went into a restaurant, I think, about 2 hours before the game, right next to our hotel with some people. And I asked the bartender he had some basketball game on. I said, "You're going to flip over?" He said, "What's going on today?" I'm like, "We are literally around the corner from the game." This guy did not know the semifinal game was going on.
We had Eli Gold on yesterday, and man, we missed the sad news last night. And I certainly would have asked him about John Madden yesterday if we would have known, unfortunately, what was going to happen. Just out of curiosity, you've been doing this a long time. Did you ever have any interactions with John Madden over the years at all?
I did once or twice, and I can't say they're classic, but I will say this, because you know, I think when he had a book out, we interviewed him and one other time, and he was always affable. You know, the thing about John Madden, from everything that I encountered personally and what I've read and heard today, is that he was the quintessential authentic commentator. And if you go back, you know, he opened the door for everyone that has followed. You know, when I think of Madden, I probably, if I had to relate someone to him, it wouldn't be in football. It would be Charles Barkley in basketball, because he's as close to Madden, you know, as you can get. Somebody that just doesn't really care what he says, but still relates to the wealthiest person watching, or the hardest working blue collar worker out there. And what I thought has been lost in all of this was the fact the guy was a great football coach. I mean, he was a Super Bowl winning coach, but he opened the door for everyone that has followed, you know, whether it's Tony Romo or anyone else. And before Madden, there was only one other commentator that was ever really talked about, and he was reviled, and that was Howard Cosell. But, you know, you cannot compare John Madden and Howard Cosell. One was a nasal-sounding Brooklyn lawyer who used, you know, big words that nobody ever could understand. And then here comes Madden along, who never said anything
Boom.
That was difficult to comprehend other than the fact he talked so fast.
That is well done. By the way, I didn't even really think about the Barkley and Madden comparisons. That's pretty good. I like that.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, SEC Network and ESPN. As we sit here and we have these bowl conversations, and you know that it's not like it used to be, I'll just be honest with you. I am excited for the Alamo Bowl tonight because it is a one-night-only return of Big Game Bob. How significant is it significant that he is going to go to the sidelines maybe one more time? Do you think that this reignites the fire for him that – maybe he could make a return full-time at some point?
I don't think so, because I think if Bob really wanted to get back into coaching, he probably could have had the job at Oklahoma. But the problem that I think is that he knows how difficult it is now. You know, he's had a good glimpse of Lincoln Riley, and I think a lot of guys at that point say to themselves, can I recruit the same way that Lincoln Riley does? Now Nick Saban is different. He's got a system that is unmatched by anyone, but that's really where the game is. And I felt Bob Stoops was close to being burned out. Now I know that, you know, he came back and coached in, I guess it was the XFL, or maybe he never did coach. I can't remember.
Yeah, no, he did.
And I think that's what these guys, I think that's the limit because he, I would say Bob Stoops could have had a half a dozen to a dozen jobs over the last 3 or 4 years, and has shown almost, he's shown no interest in any of them.
So moving on to the games this weekend, I mean, I think everybody feels Alabama is going to win that game. And even though you can make the argument that they're number one, but maybe they're not really number one, you know, with how their season went, this is the matchup against Cincinnati. If you're trying to draw up a game plan for Cincinnati for them to, let's just say, be in this game, what is it they need to do?
I would literally steal the Auburn game plan, where Auburn put a lot of pressure on Bryce Young and the offensive line did not pick up the blitzes just, like they did against Georgia, and be reckless. And that's the thing about that still disappoints me to this day. When Auburn got to even though they lost the lead, they get to overtime, they have a chance to win the game on a 2-point conversion, and Brian Harsin kicks an extra point. Like, he's got T.J. Finley as his quarterback against Bryce Young. He's got a shot. All he needs is to complete a 3-yard pass, and he wins the game. And he didn't. I think Luke Fickell just has to be reckless. You can't try to outsmart Nick Saban. You just have to jump on them. And I think Cincinnati could make this game interesting. I know it's the easiest thing in the world to say go with the pass. And this is a 19.3 differential, whatever. Alabama just kills teams in this spot. But I worry a little bit about Alabama only because they really they only had 2 or 3 great games this year, and they played a lot of clunkers. So I think they're vulnerable.
Do you think, though, that Auburn game lit a fire under them? You know, Saban doesn't have to prove anything. We already know that. I mean, he's the greatest of all time, but he wants to win. And so do you think, because of the narrative of, oh, maybe this is one of his worst teams he's had at Alabama, even though they have the one loss because of the clunkers that you mentioned and the close games, did that wake them up and therefore they should be viewed as very dangerous?
I think maybe it did for that one game, but I don't know how anybody could still be awake nearly a month after the SEC game. Do you guys? That's really, I think, the problem. Whatever momentum they had, I think, is now in the wind. And I do think there's a sense, now you'll never hear it from an Alabama fan, but I can guarantee you Nick Saban would rather not see Kirby Smart again in the championship game. Because even though he knows what has happened, that's, you know, it's also probably plays a little bit to Georgia's advantage that they just have been a punching bag for Alabama, and maybe this time it will be different. Now, again, that's not what we're talking about here, but I think Cincinnati, I think there's an unpredictability about this game that I'm intrigued by. If Alabama loses, it's going to go down as one of the biggest shockers in college football history, just because of the Cinderella story. So that part of it won't be hard to write. But I do worry a little bit about the layoff. That would be my only concern about not saying, oh, absolutely, Alabama rolls.
So with Georgia, to go to the other side of it, I mean, Georgia, Michigan, I think, you know, the matchup could be good, but people expect Georgia to win this game. But what if they don't? Do Georgia fans change Kirby Smart's name to Mark Richt at that point because it's kind of the same thing?
Yes, I've been a devoted supporter of Kirby Smart. It will be hard to be Kirby Smart the spokesperson if they don't win this game. That means there are a couple of things at stake. Certainly the Power Five reputation with Cincinnati, but I think the biggest the most pressure is on Kirby Smart. And yeah, especially with this quarterback situation that is still hard to describe. I talked to somebody yesterday who knows the ins and outs, and he says, "I'm telling you, Stetson Bennett's the better player right now." I said, "Okay, well, we'll see." But I think losing to Harbaugh too would be painful. Now, I like Georgia and Alabama to meet, but I think the pressure, nobody has more pressure than Georgia.
Would you have had a preference? I made this comment last night of I would have preferred to see Cincinnati, Michigan, even though that would have meant we're getting Alabama, Georgia 2 in the semis, which I know the networks, your employer, wouldn't want that. They would want it to be the national championship game. But looking at it from a pure football standpoint, would you have liked Cincinnati, Michigan a little bit better?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, if you're being realistic, I think you have to probably put Georgia at 2 or 3. And I think the only way we were getting an Alabama-Georgia game, if Georgia won by 1 point and we just finally determined, you know what, Alabama's still one of the best teams. But then that wouldn't have been fair. So, yeah, I mean, everyone accuses me of being an SEC guy, but I'm not that excited by an SEC final. To me, it just raises the questions. And I think the public would tune out a little bit, even though it's probably the best game. You know, I've seen this game before. I've seen Alabama LSU in the BCS finals, and for some reason, the rest of the country gets very upset about this.
Paul, real quick on the way out, the Dolphins are in town on Sunday. Jalen Waddle is having an unbelievable rookie year for the Dolphins. He's going to have 100 catches in his rookie year. He's going to be in pretty good company. Only guys to ever do that in their rookie season. But I want to ask you about Tua, and I don't know how much NFL you watch, but really, to this point, like, Tua has not exploded onto the scene, or Tua has not had the career that, you know, most people thought coming out of college, where he was a can't miss. And I get it, albeit he had the nasty injury and that has played a factor, but we're a little bit, you know, we're removed from that now. Are you surprised that, you know, when I watched him Monday night, it's like he does a lot of good things and then he makes throws. It's like, boy, I don't remember those throws at Alabama, but, you know, maybe that's... Maybe that's silly to say that, but maybe he was doing that, but they were just winning so big, you just forget about that stuff. But are you surprised to this point? There's still a lot of question marks about whether Tua is going to make it as a quarterback in the NFL.
Not completely, because he had, until the injury, everyone said the same thing. They'd never seen a better quarterback since him. You know what? I think Alabama's had two better quarterbacks after him. I think Mac Jones was as flawless as anyone I've ever seen, and Bryce Young, we still have another year of him. I mean, he really could be remarkable. I want to say one thing about Waddle, though. Waddle was the best receiver on Alabama's team last year until he got hurt.
Yep.
And then Devontae Smith came along and won the Heisman. I mean, that's how good he was, until he was just dynamite. So, I am not surprised by him, but Tua, to me, I was never crazy about his size and physicality for the NFL, and I think we're seeing some indications of that already.
Yep, certainly. Appreciate the visit as always. Enjoy your time down in Dallas. Happy New Year, Paul, and we'll talk to you in 2022.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
All right, Happy New Year. Paul Feinbaum, member of his show every day 2 to 6. And you can hear it on 94.9. And every week, his visits are brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. I want to talk to you about my friends at Curation CBD. You hear me talk about them every day because they present our show. And I'll tell you what, I had a lot of people here recently who have been reaching out asking more about Curation CBD, whether it's aches and pains that they're experiencing on their body or their children. I got a call yesterday from a friend of mine that said, hey, his son, who's younger, who's high school, has been dealing with this, and what do you think? And so a lot of you are asking, or for your pets, and I've really appreciated that, because I think you're going to find the same results that we have found in our house if you experience Curation CBD. And if you do have those aches and pains and you're looking for the solution, well, I would say this is where you should be looking. Curation means healing, and that right there says a lot. And plus, it's locally and organically sourced right here in Middle Tennessee. From seed to final cell, Curation is passionate about providing quality products for everyday use and your pets too. You've heard me say that. The pet tincture, whether they have aches and pains, just an older pet, we all have had a pet that had a hard time getting around or has anxiety issues, whether it's with storms or just when you leave. They've got pet treats that can calm that, or unfortunately a pet that has seizures, like our female German Shepherd. We have found incredible results with their pet tincture. Look, all of these apply, and do me a favor. When you check out, when you're on their website at CroatianCompany.com. When you go to your checkout, make sure you put in that promo code DDC25. DDC25. That'll get you 25% off your order at CroatianCompany.com. Croatian CBD, curated for life. We just talked about bowl season with Paul Feinbaum, and we're your home for bowl games and for the college football playoffs. That's brought to you by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown and Central Barbecue. Today at 1:15 on 94.9, three games on tap. We hope. We think. That's the plan. Virginia Tech, Maryland, Clemson, Iowa State, and Oklahoma, Oregon. That's today's action on 94.9. 312 Pizza Company is the perfect spot to catch every game during the bowl season. For a list of games carried right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game or 94.9, hit up our website, thegamenashville.com/bowl games. Mississippi State got routed.
Yes, they did.
Last night. They got punked.
I watched a little bit of that, and then I flipped over and watched the John Madden, All Madden documentary. FS1 showed it again, so I was watching that, but I was keeping up with the score, and yeah, that was not much of a game.
I watched I didn't see that. I don't know how I missed that.
They're going to show it tonight, too.
Okay. I did watch, they were having kind of a special sports center, and they were trotting out Bob Costas and I'm trying to think who else did they bring on there. Mike Holmgren. They were trotting out guys to obviously talk about John Madden's career. Obviously, if you didn't hear, he died yesterday at age 85. And man, great career, broadcasting career, and coaching career, as we know. And hadn't heard from him in a while. You know,
he's laid low since his retirement.
Mm-hmm. So, what did you think of the documentary?
I thought it was really well done. I think the coolest part of it was watching him either watch like himself from, you know, his coaching days and like press conferences, or watch, you know, what people were saying about him. Like, I think it was really well done. Tom Rinaldi, was a part of it, directed it. And how it was set up was basically John watching the documentary as they were making the documentary is kind of how it was. And so that was neat. That was really cool to see what, you know, his sons and his wife and Lawrence Taylor and, you know, other players, Troy Aikman, Brett Favre, Brady, like all said about him. So that was cool. The stuff with Summerall, like how they, you know, they were kind of oil and water at first and didn't necessarily want to work together and then become maybe the greatest duo in broadcasting, in sports broadcasting history. I mean, those guys, you know, were the voices of my childhood watching games, and especially when they moved to Fox, you know, that's when I think his career skyrocketed even more. I mean, he was a household name, and so was Pat Summerall, but, you know, they go to Fox. I remember when Fox took over, that was when I was, you know, really coming to the age of watching football and, you know, paying attention. I remember Madden and Summerall, and they were just fantastic together. I had no idea he worked with Bob Costas early on in his career. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Bob was going down memory lane.
Mm-hmm. And Vince Scully.
Bob Costas, by the way, Al Michaels for a long time on ABC and NBC.
Yeah, that was after
Al Michaels and John Madden, I know, was almost like a decade, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Between ABC and NBC?
Yep. Al said 7 years. I thought it was longer than that. But Al
7 years? Okay.
Yeah, Al said 7 years because I think it was either four on ABC, three on NBC, or vice versa. But when Summerall retired, that's when John left Fox and went to the Monday Night booth with Al. And so he then can say, because he worked for NBC, it was his last stop, he worked for all four broadcast networks, and I think he's the only one to be able to claim that. It's pretty cool.
Well, something that Bob Costas said last night that I didn't realize is that he was a part of John Madden's tryout.
Yes, that's in the documentary.
Yeah, I mean, that was That was pretty interesting. I had not heard that before. Like, he did basically his audition with him.
Yeah, so Bob was doing like the, you know, the bottom tier games for CBS. And was, you know, not like a full-time guy. This was early in his career. And Madden had been, they talk about this in the documentary, Madden had been adamantly against going into broadcasting. Like, he didn't want to do it. He thought Cosell was, you know, silly, and he didn't want to be that. And he talked about Cosell used to piss him off with some of his questions. And so he just didn't want anything to do with broadcasting. And finally, CBS came to him and said, you know, we'd really like to have you. And, you know, he initially said no, and his agent told him, you know, you know, if this is something that you think you're going to want to do, you better say yes now, because they may not ask again. And John said that he used to tell his players in training camp that, you know, if you quit now, you'll never play football again. And so that kind of the coaching mentality came to mind. So he did it, and they paired him with Costas for a game at the LA Coliseum, which I guess was like a preseason game, a tryout game. And that's kind of what started it. But yeah, I mean, they have clips of it in the documentary of a very, very young Bob Costas working with Madden to kind of get him going. And then they did a handful of games together that year. And that's when Madden just started working his way up through the lineup at CBS and worked with Dick Stockton and Vin Scully, and then finally got to Pat Summerall. So you think about all the Hall of Fame broadcasters that Madden worked with. Like, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I don't remember. I mean, I was young enough to know what was going on. I don't really remember John Madden on the sidelines. It's not like I wasn't watching games, but I was too young to really soak in John Madden on the sidelines as the Raiders head coach. I remember the Super Bowl with them against the Eagles. You know, was that Madden or was that Flores? I don't even, now that I think about it, was that?
Against the Eagles? I think that would have been Tom Flores at that point. Madden won in like the mid to late 70s, 76,
yeah. Yeah,
I think.
Because that one was more, what, 80?
Yeah. Flores was later. You know, I've said this on the show when talking about Dad, that, you know, he was a big Raiders fan. John Madden was the reason he became a Raiders fan. He loved Madden. Like, he absolutely loved John Madden. And, you know, when I got into broadcasting and all of that, he would be like, you know, you could, you know, you may not work with John Madden, but you could be like Pat and, you know, find your John Madden. I mean, he loved those two. And so that was kind of something I laughed about yesterday. I'm like, damn, Dad got to meet John Madden. But yeah, that's why my dad was a Raiders fan, because of those teams. And he retired at 42 years old.
Yeah. Yep. Unfortunately for me, I can't ever get the memory that I have the most of John Madden. And it's weird because he reached so many, that was kind of the interesting part about John Madden, right? There's so many different groups that he reached, right? Whether it's the older group with his coaching days that we were talking about, whether it's you know, everybody in between with his days as a broadcaster, or the young demo with the Madden game. So I mean, he's got a lot of tentacles over his career. But for me, I mean, the one thing that I'll never, just because I've interviewed him so many times over the years in person. And
have
on
you?
The phone.
I didn't know that.
No, Frank Caliendo. Oh. That's where I'm going with this. It's not Madden. Frank Caliendo is, I can't ever get out of, you know, the part of, that's part of his, that's been a big part of his skit for a long time.
It made
him. Him doing John Madden impressions that, you know, and he's told the story when I've interviewed him many times of how, you know, because I've asked him, is it, you know, who gets mad? And he said John Madden does not like it. John Madden would never talk to him about it. You know, he said a lot of people embrace it, and you know, they understand he's a comic, you know, and they're cool with it, but John Madden was not one of them.
Well, yeah, and the Madden impersonation was kind of one of his first ones and made him, because he would dress up like him. He'd do the gray hair, and you know, they're both bigger guys. Now John's, you know, tall, huge, but yeah, I remember him saying that, you know, when he's been in studio, that Madden did not appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I know it wasn't him, but he's a comic, right? He wasn't painting a flattering picture of John Madden. Look at this guy here. He's wide open. He's open here. Boom. You know, and he just, you know, how Caliendo does all that stuff. I'm not going to pretend to be him. He's the expert. He's really good at it. And it was spot on. It was really good.
Well, because the thing that I loved about John Madden was the stuff he would say was like the most obvious thing. Like,
yeah, that was part of Caliendo's skit.
But that's what made Madden Madden. It's like, you know, this guy here needs to get into the end zone, and that's a touchdown. Well, thanks, John. Yeah, you're right. It is. But that's the kind of stuff that it was. But he related to so many people. And one thing that they showed in the documentary that was really cool was he talked about the Madden Cruiser and how the Madden Cruiser came to be. That it wasn't necessarily a fear of flying. It was he was really claustrophobic.
Really? You know? Because I always thought that's what he said.
That so when it comes up in the story, they ask his sons, and his son kind of laughs and says, "Do we have long enough to really tell this story?" And he goes, "He will never tell you that it's a fear of flying. It's that he's claustrophobic, and he got really claustrophobic on a flight, and he said, and it freaked him out, and he said he'd never get on a plane, and he never got on a plane again."
Huh.
And that was 1980. And John said the same. John was like, I swore, you know, I wrote it out.
Do you think that's what – are they saying that's what contributed to him walking away early on as a coach, because you have to fly?
No. No, this was – this incident happened after his career. No, they said in the documentary that he walked away because he was just so mentally beat up and was kind of a miserable person just because of how much it takes out of you as a coach. And – you know, he wanted to be a husband and a dad and those things, and so he walked away. I mean, a 10-year coaching career with a Super Bowl, you know, win, and then he's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's a pretty good resume. I mean, his winning percentage is still the best, I believe, in the NFL. So he walked away with a pretty good legacy. But when he would ride cross country on the Madden Cruiser and stop at, you know, rest area or whatever, like he would leave when he was done meeting everybody. He would sign autographs and take pictures and sit and chat with people, and that was like his favorite part of doing that, was being able to interact with fans, and he loved it. He embraced it. Like, he was never in a hurry. He was never, you know, like, hey, leave me alone. That just wasn't him. And
that's interesting, because I've really never talked to anybody in this business that's ever really had dealings with him.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
I know. Like, I mean, I figured you would have interviewed him on Radio Row.
Well, I want – no. John Madden didn't come on Radio Row. Mm-mm.
Nope. See, that's shocking. Like, nope. I figured he would.
All the Super Bowls I covered, John Madden never came on Radio Row. Mm-mm.
Hmm. But, like, Al did and
– Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I've had – many times I've interviewed Al Michaels.
Did you have Summerall?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's weird. That's crazy that he would never do that.
And I'd have to ask Willie. He'll join us in about an hour from Washington for the rest of the show. I don't believe over the years we've ever interviewed him. I'm pretty sure of it. Like, I'm pretty sure I would remember that. And like I said, I haven't really – I mean, you heard me ask Paul Feinbaum. I mean, he's been doing this a long time. And whether it's – don't forget, he was a journalist. You know, he's a newspaper guy. So he's been in the business for what, 4-plus decades, and he basically said he really didn't have any much interaction. I mean, I just have really talked to no one that's really ever had any interaction around John Madden, which is weird. So it's interesting to hear you say that he was always about, you know, being amongst the people, because I was never around him.
That was how it was portrayed, you know, in the documentary and what people had said. Real quick, I know I got to go to break. Somebody asked me or said to me last night that we don't have a John Madden type in this generation. And my response to that was, it could have been Gruden, but he obviously screwed it up. by going back into coaching and then everything that happened. Do you agree with that? That he could have been.
That's pretty good.
He could have been that.
I think that's. It's not bad.
I don't think Romo is the Madden type. I think I like Romo. I think Romo does a good job, but I think Gruden could have been, to a certain extent, what John Madden was.
Yeah, I think there's probably I think that's about as close as I don't know if you're going to get a better example than that. I'd say that's about the best example I could come up with. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to get your thoughts.
We'll never know. Yeah, we'll never know. Although he did do it for a long time. I mean, Gruden was in the booth for what, a decade?
10 years, yeah.
Yeah, so. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk with Robbie Stanley. We'll bring up that conversation about Ryan Tannehill. We'll also touch on the Preds. We'll do that to kick off the second hour of the DDC. That's next.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.